They already mentioned to you the projector wasn't working this morning, but that's not the end of it. I mean, the big subwoofer wasn't working. You know, we had no more started practicing probably 30, 40 minutes late trying to get everything working, and I started to feel a headache coming on. I was like, I am not going to get a headache. So I started rebuking that while I'm, you know, playing. It's like, you know, I really don't care about the headache. I just care about I'm not going to be distracted by a headache. So I changed that prayer. It's like, I am not going to be distracted in worship, you know, by a headache, and I'm not going to be distracted while I talk. So it's mostly subsided, so that's great. You know, I always come up with some little title for what I'm going to talk about. I had about probably 12 of them I could have used today, but I just picked the snarkiest one, you know, I guess. I call it fruit. Who needs it? Is fruit and bearing fruit important? Well, that's an easy question. You're going to have to give me an answer. I'm not going to say anything else. Yeah, okay. Well, I think it is because Jesus indicated that it was in John 15. I'm just going to read that passage to you. And to set this up, you know, Jesus is coming towards the end of his ministry, getting ready for his to be sacrificed. He knows what's going on. He's just now kind of clued in the apostles about it. They've been at the Last Supper. They've had their feet washed. Judas has got up and run out. Now they're headed, you know, probably through the Kidron Valley up towards the Mount of Olives. And likely, you know, just about everywhere there was a hillside that had good drainage, they planted, you know, grapes. And everywhere else they planted olive trees and other stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if they were standing in the middle of a vineyard when he starts talking about this, because Jesus was very good to use examples of things that are around him that he and his Father had created to get the point across to people when he was talking to them. So he says to them, I am the true vine and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit he prunes so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Keep in mind why, you know, in a minute we'll talk about why would he, what's that got to do with grapes and vines? Remain in me and I will remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. If a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not remain in me, he is like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask what you wish, and it will be given to you. This is my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so I love you. Now remain in my love. If you obey my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have obeyed my Father's commands and remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy... Whoops, I lost my spot. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and your joy may be complete. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends, for everything I have learned from my Father I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you to go and bear fruit, fruit that will last. Then the Father will give you whatever you ask in my name. You're all going to have to forgive me, but I got to put a mint in my mouth, or we're not going to have enough voice to get through this. So, first two verses are, I'm the vine, I'm the true vine, and my Father's a gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit. I don't know how many times I've heard this taught wrong. You know, it's important to bear fruit, but a lot of what I've heard, it's just plainly wrong, and it damages Christians. So we're going to set that wrong straight. You probably are already aware of it. So what does Jesus mean when he's talking about he cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit? Sometimes this has been, people talk about the fruit as evangelism. You know, some people teach that if you persist in life without bearing evidence of salvation, you'll lose it. I don't think either one of those are accurate. I think what Jesus is talking about here, the problem with the picture that has created the misteachings and the damage is that there's one vine, it's Jesus, and we're all branches that come off of that one vine. And yes, branches get broken off. I've got some behind me too. I won't run out of water now because I got it here and I got it here. Thank you, Donnie. That's all right. I love water. Grapevines love water, so, you know, it's not like each of us are a branch sticking in one vine and the branches that don't produce fruit get broken off and thrown in the fire. That's not what he's talking about. And some of that is only obvious if you dig into the word versus just read it and let the words just, you know, be whatever is on the page without trying to get into it. So we'll actually talk about that a little bit later too. Jesus says he's the true vine, probably teaching the disciples. There's not just one vine in that vineyard. There's many vines. Jesus is all of those vines. And he's in us. So it's like we are the grape plant. Every one of us is an individual plant. Jesus is the vine of that plant. He's hooked to the roots. All we are the branches. Now, some of our branches produce fruit, some of them don't. And some folks may not have branches producing fruit for whatever reason. But just willy-nilly going about breaking off a branch that Donnie's not producing fruit, so I'm going to break him off and throw him in the fire. Does that even sound like God to you? No. So when you're reading this, see yourself as the grape plant, Jesus as the vine, and you have different branches. Instead of each of us being an individual branch, you know, I got one branch and that's me. And if I don't produce some fruit, because that's not what he's talking about. If that is what he's talking about, and that's the way we're supposed to interpret it, why did he spend all the time teaching about not being a Pharisee? If everything depends on whether we get to stay connected or broken off for our entire life has to do about only fruit production, then we've reduced our relationship to God to one of performance again. And God doesn't like the way Pharisees approach him for a relationship. And that's why he gave us the way we approach him as a relationship. And it's only Jesus, our true vine. Jesus said in there, he said, every branch in him. So he's just not referring to everybody. He's referring to believers now because we are branches in him. So a vineyard's got, you know, let's talk about a vineyard. I really enjoyed sitting down and doing this because normally I just sit down and start writing. God shows me stuff. But on this one, I started pulling up videos of how to tend to, you know, a vineyard to see how different, you know, gardeners do it. And it's amazing to me how, and I don't think Jesus just happened to be walking through a vineyard and decided, I'll teach about grapevines. I think he intentionally walked them probably to a vineyard, so he had all the examples he needed sitting right there while he taught. Now, in a vineyard, you've usually got trellises. Sometimes they're single trellises, and you just got a vine coming up going along. And the grapes will hang down. Sometimes the branches that are going to produce fruit are called canes. And sometimes they've got these trellises, they got them strung out with like double wires. And instead of in the old days having to tie them, you know, to the trellis, They just weave them through the wires, and the wires hold them there, and the wires don't damage the branches. Sometimes you got a double trellis, so you got a vine coming up, a couple, you know, main branches going off right and left, and up higher you got, I mean, there wouldn't be much point in sticking them way up in the air. The grapevine could grow that high, but then you'd have to climb up on a ladder. It's just like when you go to Edgefield and you look at the peach trees, they don't let them grow 20 feet high because nobody wants to climb up into a peach tree. They keep it all down to where you can get the fruit out of it. All of our branches need tending if we want to bear fruit, if we want to bear good fruit. Now, this word in this first part where he says he cuts off, and if you go to the King James or the Authorized Version somewhere, I think it says takes away. But if you go back, one of the things you get by studying the Word of God is you can get the fuller meaning. And if you go to the Greek, that word is aero. A-I-R-O. So if you were to guess what the Greek word aero means, it sounds like a word that we use. And what would that word be? Okay, let me make it easier. Take the O off the end of arrow, and what are you left with? Air. Elevate. Lift up. Raise it up into the air. That's what the Greek. The primary meaning of that word, arrow, is to lift up. Like lift up a rock. So basically anything that you're bringing up in the air, you would arrow. Or you could almost say elevate would be an equivalent word of arrow. Cuts off is a minor definition, about nine definitions down. And sometimes that word means exactly what that says there, is cuts off. And we'll see that some branches get cut off. But the gardener doesn't necessarily just go out there willy-nilly cut off branches. A lot of times branches that are not producing fruit are the newer branches, and without somebody doing something with them, they tend to just grow out and grow down on the ground. So if you're a grapevine with a bunch of leaves on it, well, if you're a branch on a grapevine, a bunch of leaves on it laying on the ground, what do you think is going to happen to your branch and your leaves? They're going to get dirty, get nasty. When it rains, they're going to mildew, they're going to rot. They're going to be diseased. It's kind of like the picture of a brand new Christian. You know, we've accepted Christ, and now he comes along. Our branch hasn't had time. It can't produce fruit. You know, we've been living in a world full of sin with that. So he picks it up and puts it on a trellis. He elevates it. And gardeners don't just elevate, they clean. I can just see the picture. I didn't actually see them going around and doing this, but I can just see somebody with a picture of a squeeze bottle in their pocket, and they lift that vine up and they put it on that first level of the trellis, and they tie it up there, and then they take that squeeze bottle and clean all the nastiness off the leaves. And that's kind of the picture of what God does for us early on in our walk. He picks us up and cleans us off, puts us up in the air, and we can also get sunshine. I mean, to make grapes, you got to have air circulation and sunshine and a good connection into the vine and into the roots. It's amazing. Grapevines are actually amazing plants. I saw one where they grow almost anywhere. They can grow almost anywhere. In Germany, there's a section in the Rhine area where they found this, you know, grapevine. You know, it was a grape. It's not just a grape, wild grapevine. They were producing good grapes off of this, but it was like, this is the most sorry looking soil, full of rocks, rock outcroppings, and they traced that. Somebody decided to trace the roots of that grapevine and found that it went a huge distance down to a river, towards a river. Kind of a pattern or an example of what, you know, whatever you have to do, you got to get your roots to where the nourishment comes from. And in a grapevine, Jesus indicates he's the only source of nourishment. So whatever we have to do to get nourished, but with Jesus, that's what we have to do. Now, if you're a grapevine and you got branches on it, as long as that branch is not dead or not, and it's not diseased, it's capable of producing fruit with some help from the vine dresser. Actually, I've gotten far enough ahead. Well, that's good. It's good to get ahead of yourself as long as you don't get out of order. Now, just like most of those vineyard keepers would consider a new branch growing along the ground too valuable just to cut it off. It may be the branch that you want to keep. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But that's God's same picture for us. Whether we feel like we're producing valuable fruit right now or not, we're way too valuable to God for him to just say, snip it, toss it. Most of the time when you hear them talking about something to do with grapevines and it says, you know, the branches, you know, if they're not producing fruit, they're not good for anything other than to throw into the fire. It's because grapevine wood is lousy wood to do anything else with. You can't make a bow and arrow out of it. You can't make a table out of it. You can't make a handle for a hammer or a chisel or whatever they did back then. Grapevine, they either grow fruit or they don't. They're useless. The wood is just poor wood to do anything else with other than its intended purpose. So, you know, anything that they took off of the ground, could have done something else with that they would, because, you know, back in those days, they were very, they used everything, you know, that they could use for whatever they could use it for. But that wasn't worth anything. Toss it in the fire. Now, so non-fruiting believers are also too valuable, you know, to God to just cut off without tending to them to get fruit to be produced. Now, the lifting up and cleaning of believers can be a painful process. You know, I liken it to the first part of this is like discipline. You know, who came to God that he didn't have to discipline and called us to call and help us build our own disciplines so that, you know, we could start producing fruit? It doesn't have to be painful, but it can be. And you just think about your own children when you're raising your own children. Discipline can be painful, but it doesn't have to be. It depends on how willing we are to move along with what God's trying to do with us at that. You know, if he's trying to clean us, if we resist, you know, he's got to squirt that water out a little harder out of the bottle, you know, to get, you know, if we persist in being dirty, then, you know, he has to do more to get us clean. I don't think God ever wants our discipline to be painful, but he's not going to let us lay dirty on the ground. That's not a loving God. So, you know, he has to lift us up and clean us off. Otherwise, he wouldn't love us. Well, to be or not to be pruned, that is. As I go through this part, I'm going to describe a lot of what they do with grapevines. It was amazing to me to see how many parallels there are between tending a grapevine and Jesus, or, you know, the Father tending us as spiritual vines. It was amazing. And just to let you know, generally, when Donnie asks me to speak, usually God will do something with something that I've recently read. You know, I usually don't have to. It's usually within a couple of chapters of I've been reading in the last month or something. It happened to be, I thought we were going to be somewhere in the Old Testament, and he said, no, that's the end of the message. That's not the beginning of the message. The very next day, I happened to be reading this passage, and I got an aha. I said, this is the beginning. And I just sat there and marveled at, you know, once God opens up something to your mind, you wonder why you didn't see all the different aspects of it before. But it's just really neat. If a grapevine and the branches are left to themselves, what do they usually produce? Anybody ever had a grapevine in their yard? Anybody? I haven't either. But I've seen some grapevines that appeared to be untended. They look a bunch of leaves. And, you know, you can look forever and not find any fruit on them hardly. Because they like to produce foliage more than they like to produce fruit. So you might be driving along. If you went to a vineyard that's not tended, it just looked like a tons of leaves everywhere. It's amazing. I don't know how they say a brand new branch on a grapevine can grow 25 to 30 feet in a season. That's a lot, especially considering it doesn't grow that much until between like spring and fall. And there's very few 25 or 30 foot branches for a good reason. I mean, there's plenty of them if it's a wild vine. There's not that many of them in a producing vineyard. So grapevines like to produce lots of leaves, lots of branches, and very little fruit. And if it is producing fruit, half the time it's hidden in the leaves, so it doesn't get, you know, it's the same thing as the leaf. It can't get any sunshine. It's just, it's inferior. What it produces won't be worth eating. You might get grapes off of it, but if you come across a grapevine that's just all leafed out and just looks like a jungle, I wouldn't recommend putting the grape in your mouth because you're probably going to spit it back out. It won't taste worth anything. So the point is, how do you get better fruit? Well, there are things that a vine dresser can do to grapevines to get really good fruit, and there's things that God can do to us to give us really good fruit. You can prune grapevines one of two ways. If you've let it get overgrown, there's so much to take off, and some of it's so thick you got to use loppers to take it off. If you prune it every year and you tend to it, you can take a pair of hand pruners and do what you need to do with that. Now, I'm not sure, but I would suspect that the level of pain involved with loppers, you know, if I could measure it, is worse than hand pruners. So if I was a grapevine, or I would prefer to be pruned with hand pruners, which means I would have to prefer to be pruned regularly versus every now and then when I got out of hand. They usually take grapevines and they plant them about 12 feet apart, and then they let the branches that they're going to use to produce the grape-producing canes come out about 6 feet in each direction. So you got, you know, 1 6 feet this way and one coming the other direction 6 feet. And they either have two or four usually, and that's what you have. And it's amazing how far they cut some of these things back every year. Each grapevine will produce about one bud every 6 inches. So if you've got a 6 foot vine or 6 foot branch coming off with a bud, you'll get about 12 producing canes that way. I mean, only so if you want to come for buds, give her 10% and die off and they'll grow in per plant that can do something. That's what mine's about. Where they handle that back. Another, they don't find one whole vineyard. There's like this because you have an infinite cost. You can't get a mouthful of fruit to the God knows how roots. So the other ones, but differently than the other with the branches. The bigger year are branches. They can as close to the vine as they can get it. And so if for some reason something happened and one broke off on one side, they'll leave an extra cane on one side and they'll just, it's flexible and they carefully bend it around and run it down the trellis to the other side. We've probably prayed a prayer at some point about, you know, Lord, I really would like to produce good fruit. And what you didn't realize is that you were actually praying for him to prune you because you cannot produce good fruit without being properly tended to. And that involves pruning. Now, even if you haven't prayed that prayer, God's not going to let you grow into a wild vine. He'll do some pruning on his own. But like I say, a grapevine just has to sit there and do whatever the vineyard dresser decides to do to it. We have the ability to resist the pruning because, and God doesn't chase us down, hit us in the head, and slow us down long enough so he can do whatever he wants to do. You know, it requires cooperation on our part. That's the main difference between us and a grapevine. One of the reasons God has to prune us is because he knows that there are certain things that are in our life that drain the resources that should be going to the places he wants them to go, and we may be misdirecting them. I mean, not out of sin, sometimes out of ignorance, sometimes out of just not being able to say no. No is not a bad word. You know, there are many things we need to say no to, even if it is a good work. If it's not a God-directed work on our... If there's a good work, God's got somebody that's right for that work. And if he's not telling us to do that, my default is, unless God says yes, I take that as a no. Because it's easier to correct where I am by a day later or a week later hearing him say, yes, you're missing it, and then to jump into it than it is to get involved in it when he wasn't saying to get involved in it and then realize you got to back out. Because then that can be work and fruit damaging. So that's my default. I'm not saying that's a formula you should follow. That's just the one I follow. And we have to trust that God speaks to us enough to know what it is we're going to do one way or the other. He knows what he wants us to do. You know, it's just a matter of hearing. And if we're having a hard time hearing, part of our relationship with God is to say, God, I'm just not hearing you in this. What are you trying to tell me? Give me a sign. Hit me in the head, you know. Bring a fellow Christian along with the word. You know, get me the message. I'm not getting it right now. If you're doing the same old thing, producing very little fruit, it requires some kind of discipline to get cleaned up and lifted up. Chances are you're overgrown, overextended, and you need to be pruned for maximum fruit production. I can't say that that's true in every case, but I can say it's true more often than not. Sometimes pruning involves turning loose of ministry opportunities to concentrate on the ones that God knows will produce fruit from the effort that you're going to put into it. I mean, there's lots of good things that we can do. We may not be suited for it. God may know that he's got something else. We may even be suited for it. You can't always go by, are you suited for it or not? You know, I know I'm not suited to teach Greek because I don't speak Greek and I don't know Greek. And I don't need to know Greek because I got a concordance I can go look at. So if there was an opportunity for me to teach disciples Greek that wanted to learn it, I know I'm not the man. But there are things that I can teach that I know about that might make it a little harder to determine, you know, I'm well suited for this. It's the same thing with a job. You can be well suited for a job and it be completely wrong. We always need to know that God's saying, this is where you need to go, his guidance. So after you've gotten through cleaning or discipline and pruning, which is just, you know, pruning is really nothing more than sorting out everything that's important to us and making sure that he's number one and the other things are right. And then these other things down here, we just need to cut those off and toss them because they're just going to be a distraction and rob you of resources to do what I do want you to do. Now, when I think of trying to produce maximum fruit, I'm not always thinking about numbers, but I'm not always thinking about size. It's kind of you remember the story of the 12 spies that were sent into the promised land? And they wandered around, I don't know, 2-3 weeks, came back. They had good reports with the exception of one thing. But the thing that caught my eye is it said that they cut off a cluster of grapes and then they had to put it on a pole and carry it between two men. Now, what kind of cluster of grapes requires two men to carry it on a pole? Got to be a lot of them, or they got to be big, or they got to be both. That's the kind of fruit I think about when I think about what kind of fruit do I want God to produce in my life. I want it to be virtually unimaginable just with my little pea brain, but something that he can produce, you know, when I let him prune me. one thing about grapevines is the older and more mature they get, the more you have to prune them. And, you know, we tend to think that as we mature, we've been through that pruning. And now we're fit for fruit production, but that's just not really true. The more mature we are, the more pruning we probably need. You know, young Christians probably don't try to get involved into too many, you know, works that they don't need to be involved in. Sometimes in that particular case, God's having to do something to get them to be involved in it. We, on the other hand, may be involved in too much. And just like a grapevine left to its own way without any pruning, it basically becomes a thicket. You know, it's just a branches 20, 30, 40 feet long, producing nothing, lots of leaves hanging on it. So the more mature we get, the more we need to be pruned. I didn't really think about that in my life until, you know, I was going over this, and it's like, wow, that's kind of a little blind spot in my life. I mean, I'm always aware and I'm always desiring God to prune me if he needs to. Well, there's not an if he needs to part of it. It's just like I need to be desirous of pruning and forget about that if he needs to, because he always needs to. When we get to where we are pruned, then we can start the part where he's teaching, you know, remain in me, which is really the part of abiding. There's a good little book on this I reread. Oh gosh, it's almost 20 years old. Secrets of the Vine by Bruce Wilkinson. I think did he write another one called Abiding in the Vine? No. Well, there's another book out there somewhere with that, but you know, if you have time, it's a small book. You can read it in a car. I mean, it's only about 4 inches tall, you know, and about 4 inches wide. And it takes about, you know, 2 hours to read it tops. But for the most part, I liked everything I saw in there, and it was a pretty good description. But I liked going on YouTube and actually seeing how vines, you know, are tended to, grapevines. It was really kind of eye-opening for me. So when he's talking about moving from servanthood to friendship, he's now talking about moving. You've been lifted up and tended to. You've been pruned. Now you can move beyond servanthood into friendship. A lot of us are willing just to stop at servanthood. A lot of people don't even know that God even wants to be their friend. And God has no obligation to explain everything to us that he wants to do in our life. That's part of the pruning process, is learning to trust God, even though you don't understand what's going on. But as you move to servanthood, to friendship, you do get insights into things that you wouldn't get otherwise. Insights into things he's doing with you, insights into things that he's doing in the body at large, maybe insights into other people's lives. But you know, think of it. If we had a servant, we basically tell him, bring me my meal, bring me my drink, you know, make up my bed, turn down my bed, do this, do that. You don't explain to him every little thing, you know, that you're going to do. And you don't explain to your kids every little thing you tell them to do either, because there'd be no end to the explanations. And sometimes that would, you know, be the same thing for us. But as a friend, God begins to explain things to us. I believe that abiding is really more of a command than a suggestion. And I think the reason is because God knows that left to our own nature, we wouldn't abide the way we would if we hear him command it. For example, you have to tell your kids to eat their veggies. Do you have to command your kids to eat dessert? Has anybody ever? You know, there might be a dessert every now and then that you make that they don't like, but I've never seen kids have to be forced to eat dessert. But sometimes you just got to make them sit at the table until they eat their veggies. It's not always that much different with us mature adults. Sometimes we mentally give mental assent to abiding, but when it just gets down to where the rubber meets to abide, the cares of the world tend to choke it out. I just got a few contrasts and we'll be done about, you know, what abiding is more about and what it's not so much about. Abiding is less about reading his word than meditating on his word. You know, we've already been reading. I mean, you're not going to get to the abiding point if you haven't been reading his word anyway. It's one of the ways you get there and one of the ways you stay there. But then you need to add something on to it besides just reading his word. You want to meditate on his word, which means focus on it. The last couple of years, my prayers have been in my morning time with the Lord is, Lord, you know how many times I've read this book. But I know there's so much more in there for me to get. And I'm asking you to not let me just read past something and say, you know, hey, great, I got my Bible reading done this morning. You know, sometimes I need to read less and listen more about, is there anything in this, you know, it's better to read one chapter and let God fill you up with stuff he wants to tell you about that word than it is to read two chapters and not have time to sit there and listen. So less about reading and more about meditating, although it doesn't mean stop reading. It means use your meditation process while you do read. It's less about devotions and more about being devoted. And devoted basically means the same thing as almost like holy, set apart. You know, make our time, whatever time that we're spending with him, devoted to him. It's less about set aside time in the morning to be with him and more about being attentive to his presence 24/7. Doesn't mean we should stop being with him in the morning. I read something somewhere. It might have even been in the Secrets of the Vine. It's there's a guy that did a study of major leaders in the world, Christian and otherwise, and virtually every one of them rises earlier than they have to in the morning to do whatever it is they think they need to do to get themselves set for the day. Sometimes that can be really hard. That can be hard for young parents especially, because sometimes it's hard to get up before, you know, you're already getting up to get your kids off to school and all that kind of stuff, so how do you get up earlier than that? Sometimes you have to go to bed earlier than you would want to. Maybe you don't do it every day, but you got to find a time that you can spend with God. Feelings are more about commitment. You know, I don't love Kim based on just feelings. If I did, love would do this. I mean, obviously, if you have an argument, you'd probably do that. You know, but commitment keeps your love at an even level, even through difficult times. And we need to approach, you know, God the same way. You know God's presence is near you, whether you feel it or not. Just assume his presence is there and try to enter into it, and maybe the feelings will, you know, come after. I mean, even in our own natural lives, what's that little cute little phrase, fake it till you make it? Well, it works here too. I mean, fake it till you make it. If you don't feel God's presence when you're getting up in the morning, you know he's there. Just imagine what it would be like if you did feel his presence, and, you know, eventually you will start. You know, God's not going to hide himself from us, you know, when we're making ourselves available to him. It's less about sacrifice and more about obedience. That's when we know we're abiding. When you're abiding, you produce more fruit with less effort. It takes a lot more effort on the part of a grapevine to produce good fruit with untended vines. Matter of fact, it's just not possible. And that's why they don't do it naturally and why they have to be tended. I want to read, you know, if you feel like, you know, if you feel like all your branches are dead, there's good news for that too. He's not going to snap them all off. I want to read you a little something. This is what I thought I was going to start with. This is what I'm going to finish with. Let me set the stage for this one. The Israelites have come out of Egypt. We've done a whole bunch of things. That's about the most rebellious. You have to wonder, why did God even pick this people? They are so rebellious and hard-headed. You know, they see a miracle one day and they complain the next day. You know, they're eating manna every day in the middle of the desert. He's bringing water out of rocks and everywhere else. But, you know, the moment that they get the least little bit of thirst on the end of their tongue, it's like, why did you bring us out in the desert to kill us? I mean, at least we had water to drink and food to eat in Egypt. Yeah. Well, a lot of times people left to their own devices will return to Egypt, and that's not where we need to be. But it got so bad that at one point, one of the Levites named Korah and challenged Moses and Aaron's authority, saying, who are you to tell us what to do? We are also Levites. Does God not speak to us? Blah, blah, blah. And I don't know what they were planning on doing. If they took over, were they going to go back to Egypt or, you know, wander around in the desert some more? But God had an interesting look. Well, God said, stand back. And he said, I'm getting rid of this mess. And he just opened up the earth, swallowed Korah and his family and all those rebellious people and their families down in the earth, closed it back up. Gone, don't see him anymore. The very next day, the Israelites start complaining about Moses and Aaron's leadership. It's like, you don't really learn fast, do you? You better be standing on a rock somewhere because the ground may, you know, I would think the ground's going to open up and swallow me. I'd be afraid to say anything bad. I might think it, but it wouldn't come out of my mouth. Well, they seem to have no filters. And God said, I've had enough of this. All right, so here's what he tells them to do. And this is even after, you know, after he swallowed up the thing, a plague started. Because it wasn't just Korah and them rebelling. Everybody was rebellious. They just hadn't vocalized it. A plague started, and Moses sent Aaron with a censer, you know, with burning incense out into the middle of them. And it stopped the plague, and 14,000 people or something like that died. Then the very next day, they complain again. The ground opens up. A plague is swallowed. A plague starts and is killing people. The people that we're complaining about are the ones that, with our eyes, apparently ran out there and stopped the plague. But yet we're going to be stupid enough to complain again tomorrow. So God said, let's put an end to this stupidity. The Lord said to Moses, speak to the Israelites and get 12 staffs from them. The staff was the sign of leadership, you know, and the leader of each tribe had the leadership staff, or scepter, they might have called it. One from the leader of each of the ancestral tribes. Write the name on each man on his staff. He didn't want there to be any mistake when he did what he did. There'd be names on every staff. On the staff of Levi, write Aaron's name, for there must be one staff for the head of each ancestral tribe. Place them in the tent of meeting in front of the testimony where I meet with you. The staff belonging to the man I choose will sprout, and I will rid myself of this constant grumbling against you by the Israelites. So Moses spoke to the Israelites and their leaders, gave them 12 staffs, one for the leader of each of the ancestral tribes, and Aaron's staff was among them. Moses placed the staffs before the Lord in the tent of the testimony. The next day, Moses entered the tent of the testimony and saw that Aaron's staff, which represented the house of Levi, had not only sprouted, but had budded, blossomed, and produced almonds. My original sermon was going to be fruit from a dead stick. God can produce fruit from a dead stick if he wants to do what he needs to do. So if you feel like your branches are all dead, don't worry. God's in the business of making things sprout and produce fruit, even though they might have been dead. This one's not even plugged in anything. It's just laying on the ground in the dust, in the sand, in the desert. So that did put an end to it. And then the Israelites go, what was their response? Oh, my God, we're all going to die. They probably don't know how close they had come several times that Moses had intervened that they wouldn't die. So even if you feel like all your branches are dead, that's not a problem for God. He can make fruit come out of anything. But he is going to tend to your vines to make your fruit the best fruit that you can. Anybody in here want to produce more fruit with less effort? Well, let's stand and ask God that. Let's dismiss ourselves in prayer. Me pray for you. Let's just stand for a minute and you pray, you know, and ask God, say that I'm willing to be disciplined. I desire pruning and I'm desperate to abide in you.